I have waited almost 2 years for a sign from God. So when I heard the warning bells of Aquila, I knew the moment of my destiny had come. You will be my guiding angel.
Me? Sir, the truth is, I talk to God all the time. And no offense, but he never mentioned you.
Greetings, and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. I'm asleep, dreaming that I'm awake. Wondering if I'm dreaming, I'm Chris. With me tonight in chair number two, is she flesh or is she spirit? Whatever she is, she's Sharon.
I am Sorrow. No, I'm Sharon.
Sharrow.
Sharrow.
You're something like that. Anyway.
I wish I could sound like Michelle Pfeiffer.
Shaboobie. You're Shaboobie.
Sorrow.
In chair number three, this walking corpse has a name, and that name is Pete.
Yep, that's me.
That's really mean.
Because I'm dead sexy.
I like how you turned that around, Pete.
If there were a zombie movie about you, it would be called Dead Sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Damn straight.
He'd be like the sexy vampire.
Hey, as you well know, we talked about the Flight of Dragons last episode on the request of one of our listeners, Joe, and we asked about Joe's opinion of the movie. Sharon did specifically, and because Sharon asked nicely, Joe sent us his opinion of the movie. So
thank you, Joe.
So thank you, Joe. And without your permission, I'm going to read it on the podcast.
With your indulgence.
Read the summary, because I thought it was very eloquent.
Joe said, "A part of me still sees this as my first exposure to fantasy and wants to insist it's perfect. The truth is, it's just a good film. I agree with you guys that it is obviously aimed at a younger age group, and because of that, the story suffers a bit. That said, there are some incredible moments as well. The fight with the ogre and the tragic death of Smurgle were beautifully done, as the fight is intense, and the calm that comes after, where the rain is falling as they look on poor Smurgle, is so striking. I was really hoping to hear your opinions on those scenes, but other things stuck with you, understandably." I gotta agree with Joe on that. I mean, we did completely miss talking about that, and that was a pretty weighty scene.
It sounds beautiful. I, of course, being blind, I didn't see the rain falling, but I think there were tears in my eyes just from the sound of that point.
Joe goes on. Its biggest faults, though, are that it tries to do so much in such a small package that it sort of stumbles on itself. There are a few things that are over-explained and some things under-explained, so it feels like maybe the story got out of hand.
Yeah, I agree.
I would have to rate the film at 3 gold pieces.
Ching!
Because it does seem like a great entry into fantasy for a young mind, but its complexities are just not enough to really engage the viewer like other fantasy films. I love it, I really do, and it will always be a special place for me, but I'm not blind to its faults. Well, thank you, Joe, for your opinion. I got to agree with you on that.
Thank you, Joe.
I rated it lower than you, but I think I kind of would bump it up today if I were to do it again. It's just,
have to ask Joe a question. Joe, just for my information, can you write back to us and tell us what you would rate Excalibur and my favorite movie, Princess Bride? And in fact, other people, too, they're listening to this. I would love, because, you know, Chris and I keep having this argument over Excalibur. Well, it's my favorite and not his. So
don't forget, I'm a fan of Excalibur as well.
Yeah, anyone who wants to be on my side, please write in. And if you agree with Chris, don't write in. No, I'm just kidding.
If you're on my side, just keep it to yourself.
No. Please write in both ways, because, you know, it's good to hear everybody's opinion. I believe in that.
All right. So let's move on to this week's episode. This episode.
Absolutely.
Can't say this week's episode. We don't go fast enough.
Yeah.
We got to pick up the pace, you guys.
We need to watch more movies.
We need to pick up the pace.
Yes. So this is episode 22, where we will be talking about the 1985 then epic masterpiece Lady Hawk.
Yay!
And that's all about Lady Hawk.
Well, I rewatched it, wow, that music was pretty 80s.
Before we leap into the Alan Parsons Project moment of that, let's do a quick recap of what the movie is
about. Oh, yeah, the recap.
So the movie is about a couple that is cursed by a bishop. Who's evil.
Very evil.
Rejected by Rome, he was.
Yes.
Although he's still a bishop somehow. We'll come to that some other time.
rotten, dirty, evil man calls himself a man of the church.
Right. And he cursed the couple because he was in love with Isabeau.
Yes.
He was in love with her, but he definitely was lusting after her.
Right. He was obsessed with her. He was infatuated with her.
He was infatuated
when,
with
when
her.
When she went with Captain Navarre of the City Guard, he cursed them such
well, wouldn't
that...
wouldn't you? Sorry.
No, I wouldn't.
Captain? No?
I would like to think that I have a well-developed sense of maturity about myself, and that I have a security in my own masculinity that I won't feel that if a woman rejects me, that somehow reflects badly.
No, I meant once you go for the captain.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry.
I was saying,
you took it. You took it the wrong way.
I totally did.
Yeah.
All day long, she turns into a hawk, and all night long, he turns into a wolf. So they can never be together. They can
they
only
can
see each other briefly
each
at
other
sunset and sunrise. And thus propels the drama. And somehow they manage to stay together, even though the priest, the good priest, says that when they are in animal form, they are simply dumb beasts with no knowledge of their human life. Somehow they manage to stick close
because
to the other
person.
Because
love conquers all, and because they still realize the connection.
Plus, a lonely wolf looks for a pack, and, you know, she's giving him food and shelter.
Yeah.
He's going to stay close, and he keeps her on a tether, so...
Mm. Okay. Initial thoughts.
Wasn't as good as I remember it being, but then again, I was like 17 when I saw this, 16 maybe.
When is the last time you saw this?
When I was like 17 or 16 maybe.
Okay. Yeah,
I was maybe 19.
Yeah, because before we actually watched the movie, I was of the opinion that this movie is just not that good. And
okay.
and Pete was of the opinion, no, this is a classic, we gotta watch it. Am I right?
Yeah. And again, like I said, it had been 30 years since I'd seen it last.
Yeah.
So.
And time has not been kind.
Well, again, back to the music. I have to say, no, I'm serious. That music really, whoa, was that 80s. And very MacGyver-ish.
So here's, I captured the theme music for, this is Lady Hawk right here.
To me, it's not very fantasy-ish.
Right. So, and here is the theme to MacGyver, a 90s television series.
Wow. Very similar to me.
I didn't remember it being so MacGyver-ish.
Yeah.
But when we heard it while we were watching it, I'm like, holy crap, that's MacGyver.
Yeah, it took me out of the
fantasy
setting.
It really impresses me that you
setting.
Know that MacGyver... And by the way, MacGyver started in the mid-80s.
Did it really?
Started the same year as Lady Hawk.
Oh, no way.
Wait.
Yeah,
okay,
I
remember from the 90s because
when
it ran
you
into
said
the
90s, I thought, no, that's not 90s, that's 80s.
Yeah.
So thank you, Pete, for looking
right,
that up.
No problem. I knew that Chris was dead wrong with that. So
you see, the walking corpse has schooled you.
So it turns out I'm not completely
infallible.
You're only deputy available.
Right.
So I'd say minus one on the music.
But the thing is, a bunch of people were doing this kind of thing at the time.
Mm.
Like, if you remember, Chariots of Fire was just a few years earlier. And it had a complete synthesizer soundtrack. And it was like, about the early 1900s.
Mm.
Right.
So why didn't that completely suck? Why didn't that soundtrack really suck?
Because they would go for the more piano sound on the keyboard than the full synth sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still dun 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 dun, and it's still very much a piano sound.
Okay, so
which if they chose with to do that with Lady Hawk might have played better.
Uh-huh. Classical music would have played better. I mean, anything would have played better. Flute music.
No, because you can't pull in, modern jazz or rap for this.
I agree with you. I was being facetious, but there were times that the music was okay.
There, I actually did capture parts where the soundtrack didn't sound terrible, and it's like there's such a jarring contrast between the music for the action scenes and the music for the drama scenes. Here's one of the drama scenes.
Follow that rope. You'll find a ruined castle. There's a monk named Imperius. Give him the hawk, he will know what to do.
Sir, I don't think you understand.
Get on my horse.
You're the only one who can ride him.
You will do as I tell you. Get on my horse, now!
You know, that's a decent scoring.
No, that's really good. Yeah. That doesn't take away, that doesn't subtract
and yet here
from
we
the
have,
story.
And here we have a sample of the music from when Philippe is sneaking around in Aquila.
Stop it.
Stop. You're not playing the music from the movie. That's really from the movie?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's what it reminded me of. That's
oh, now what was he really... Oh. Chris, I knew that wasn't from the movie because that would have really made me.
That's excellent.
My husband, the Joker, the jester of all courts.
Indeed, this is a conversation. God. If we kind of went into whom Philippe and Navarre, or who Philippe and the other characters are.
Sure.
Well, Imperius. Yeah.
So Philippe is an interesting character and was probably the inspiration for everybody who wanted to play a sneaky rogue type in D&D in the 80s.
No. The interesting thing about his brother being Philippe and stuff like that is that you realize that he still has a lot to grow as an actor.
Yeah.
That was blatantly there to be the comic foil.
I agree with that.
And at the time, because I think the only other thing... This came out before Ferris Bueller, right?
Yeah, it did. It came out 2 years after War Games, which put Matthew Broderick on the map.
Right.
And he has so, two credits before that.
I thought he was funny.
TV and Max Duggan Returns.
Oh, right. I forgot he was like Max Duggan Returns.
I think it's pronounced Dugan, yeah, Chris.
Yeah.
I think it's Sepia.
I'm sure you do. Unfortunately, it's Sepia.
I say tomato.
But you know, obviously he's the comedic foil in it, and he's the, you know, the sneaky thief. But his big claim to fame is he can basically escape from anywhere,
right?
Which makes him really Houdini when it comes right down to it. But
yeah,
well, I guess he's that good.
But the whole story is essentially his POV.
Yeah.
Most of the experiential stuff was with him being there the whole time, you know.
Yeah, he's pretty much trying to carry just about every scene.
Yes.
And I don't think he's quite up to it at this point.
I disagree. No, I disagree for the square. I think you guys are being much too hard on him. No, I do.
Okay. Can you play back that part, that snippet that you had that had the dramatic music?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Play it for us if you would.
Follow that rope. You'll find a ruined castle. There's a monk named Imperius. Give him the hawk, he will know what to do.
Sir, I don't think you understand.
Get on my horse.
You're the only one who can ride him.
Stop. You're the only one who can ride him.
Yeah?
So flat. So painfully flat. It's like somebody... It's almost like just before they filmed that moment, he went, "Lion?"
I think he's scared. I think he doesn't want to say it.
I don't think he's scared.
I think
he's just not a strong actor at that point.
No, I think he's honestly scared. He doesn't want to do it. He's like, I don't want to ride the horse, you know, it's okay. I mean,
regardless of him being scared or not, he could have delivered that so much that there's a weakness to that delivery that you don't see in a later Matthew Broderick.
I agree, and I agree that there are a lot of lines that I really don't like. I don't want to say I feel embarrassed for him, but I feel uncomfortable about the way he's handling a lot of these lines. Like, he has an accent that he picks up and drops at will.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the lines just don't seem to flow. Like the walk, this one right here.
I must kill a man.
Tell me. Does this walking corpse have a name?
Me! No, sorry.
I just think that's funny!
It's not, well, it sounds almost like Groucho Marx.
Okay, but to me, I just think he embodies...
Does this walking corpse have a name?
I think he embodies a funny rogue. Like, that's what a funny rogue would sound like. I mean, I don't know, you have to suspend your disbelief.
I don't feel like he, but you see, that's it. If he could suspend my disbelief... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be bringing this up.
Exactly. Mm. Bingo.
Okay, so for you...
All right. Five gold pieces, Pete. Five gold pieces for you.
The other thing is that I appreciate the sarcastic rogue more than anybody, because I played one of those characters myself in a campaign for years. I think a lot of it is the fact that the reason why he's called the Mouse, especially, is the fact that he is essentially a skittish, somewhat frightened person, and there's a certain level of bravado that he puts on. But he doesn't succeed with it every time that he's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I don't know if that's a directorial problem, an actor problem, a combination of both, a script problem. I can't tell where the weakness lies, or all three.
Well, the director is Richard Donner, who gave us Superman 1 and 2.
Okay.
And let's see, what else did he give us? Right after this one was, right after Lady Hawk was Lethal Weapon.
Oh, right.
And right before it was The Goonies. Hmm. So, I mean, he's got a CV you could look at and go, this is respectable.
Well, I know I'm not really answering the question, but I think it's good to bring up questions, and I'm going to argue, or state my opinion, that I think sometimes it was the director, because they could have used Michelle Pfeiffer a lot more. And you, as you said, the script. And if a scriptwriter came up with, and who is this walking corpse that you speak of? You know, mm-hmm. That line could have been a different line. And right, then he might have delivered it better.
It's entirely possible that he said, can I say this instead? I just feel like a young, smart-alecky rogue would say this instead. So we don't even know if that was in the script. I mean, maybe he decided to say that.
I don't know. Maybe one of these actors might write to us and say, look, I had a problem with that line, and they'll tell us.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I think essentially the weakness of it is that it's not a bad story.
No.
It's just that its ultimate execution is not the strongest it could be. And I think that might be a problem of the script.
Yeah.
That may be something endemic of the script. And again, you could have used Michelle Pfeiffer to so much greater efficacy, and it just doesn't happen.
Well, I agree, but I also think that when she's on the screen, those are the best parts of the movie. She's really possessing the screen when she's on it.
Yeah, I'm not, and I wasn't saying, please don't take what I said the wrong way.
No, I think the problems with her character are in the story and in the script. I don't think it's with the actress. And I don't think...
No,
except her hair in that movie. And I'm blind, and I could feel the feathery wings in her hair. You know, and I don't know if that was supposed to be bird-like, or Chris described it to me, and I said, what? Why is her hair feathered? You know, like, and it was because that was an 80s thing.
Yes,
you know, everyone had hair feathered in the 80s.
Yeah,
but come on, they could have given her a wig, and it would have fit. You know, if you're going to make a fantasy movie, please make the characters' clothing and hair and everything.
And they should smell bad, too.
No, I'm not saying that.
They have rotted teeth.
I'm just saying, I'm not trying to be, like, you know, a nerdy... D&D playing, you know, Renaissance Festival. Maybe a little bit, because I am that. But
yeah.
But please, it's more appropriate to have a woman from that time not have feathery hair.
Right,
there
but
you, go.
You know, by the same token, they shouldn't have makeup on either. But they do. So I think...
Well, that might just because you saw it in HD, so that might...
Yeah. I had less of a problem with her appearance. I mean, I don't think you can say, well, you could have given her a wig. No, I mean...
Why can't I say that?
You can say that, but it's kind of a facetious thing to say, because they cut her hair to look like that. They didn't, you know, say, oh, well, you've got short hair, so this is how we're going to make it look. Right. You know, she probably had long hair at the audition, and they said, this is the look we want to go with for this...
But why? Why would you do that?
Because
I
it's the 80s
it.
Aesthetic.
Holy crazy, yo.
Okay.
So there were some, you know, she didn't really have a lot of significant lines.
That's for sure.
So they really underused the character as
they
far
made
as
her
like
a beautiful,
the structure of the
delicate,
story.
Graceful woman, which I also, you know, I don't have a problem, but women to see strong women in roles,
I do have
too.
A problem with that in and of the fact that they have been... Had it been 10 years at that point? Or 4 years? How long had it been?
From what?
From the time
that
they'd been cursed.
I think a short number of years. I think it was like 3 or 4 years.
So, but she's been having to deal with life on the road after dark for 4 years and she's still a delicate, willowy thing? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, she still could have been graceful and all of that, but she screamed a lot in this. And
right. And she could have been a harder person. She could have been somebody who, you know, who learned how to use a knife and a club and a
More depth.
But she was really just there to look beautiful and to be, you know, something that the men would fight over.
And I guess that's why you really cast Michelle Pfeiffer. You know. I think
she does that job beautifully.
She's a beautiful
No, I'm not saying that she doesn't. It's just really annoying storyline wise because I want somebody who's grown in the time that they've been under the curse.
So we wanted a little more. I think we're agreeing, actually, guys.
Well, it's also we're in the middle of a fifth wave of feminism right now, where female characters are really under the microscope, and we're looking at that through a 21st century. Lens, and that lens.
Well, that's how we look through all of our movies, Chris.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, but let's think about.
The lens wasn't there in 1985.
I know
for the majority of film critics.
Well,
I still feel that she could have been a stronger character, regardless.
No, I totally agree.
Star Trek came out in the '60s, right?
Yes.
And O'Hara
had one job on that ship.
Okay, she was
one job.
It's stupid.
She was graceful and she was delicate, but she was kick butt too, and there were storylines written for her that were very controversial, and that was
first interracial kiss.
And that was in the '70s, so we're talking
'60s.
Okay, then '60s and '70s, and this was
in the '80s. I'm not saying that feminism hadn't been invented yet. I'm just saying that we're very much more aware of it now.
I definitely think so, but it's hard for me to take off it's hard for me to step back into my 80s self because I would have been a teenager.
Plus, we don't review these movies through our 80s selves. We review them through our current lives.
Absolutely. So I think that, maybe that'll be a movie that somebody will, maybe they'll redo it. They're redoing everything else. There could be another Lady Hawk, and the transformations, as a blind person, Chris was saying they're really done badly. He said,
they don't even exist.
They don't exist.
Yeah, they're just my son Ronan put it really well. How do you put it? That it was they were just wipes.
Yes.
Yes, the transformation were wipes.
But would we have thought in the '80s that was cool, like when they had the scream, and then it was the bird screeching, like when she fell? Okay,
we wouldn't have thought that was cool because this is the this is the kind of transformation that was in the Wolfman from 1935.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, so what, did they not have a big budget for this movie?
I don't know what their budget was.
They didn't, considering they shot overseas with a primarily foreign cast.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that Donner didn't have a whole lot of backing for this one.
They did film it in Italy.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, they filmed it in Italy, so... but all of the characters have French names, and yet the story takes place in Aquila, which is in Italy.
Right.
So I was a little confused about why everybody's French in Italy.
Well, you know how it is. Talk to Monaco about that.
Well, Beauty and the Beast. Beauty is supposed to be French, too, but she has a British accent, so I don't know.
Yeah, so did the Thénardiers in Les Miserables. What's up with that?
I don't know. I mean, we could have entire hour-long conversations about this, but...
I would like to take a moment for just right now to focus in on a very tragic and unfortunate thing about this movie, but particular endemic of many of the movies of the '80s, and that is that Alfred Molina could never catch a break.
Oh my god! his character was kind of
Wait, guys, who?
He was Cesar, the wolf hunter.
Oh, the wolf hunter.
The guy's got one job. It's hunting wolves.
Okay.
He can't hunt anything else.
You guys are mean.
What is this story? What does this story look like from his point of view?
But he dies horribly.
He does.
I mean, in Raiders, he dies horribly.
Yes.
Maybe he was always cast as the guy who dies horribly.
Like he's like the Sean
and
Bean.
And that's
of
pretty
the
much
80s.
It, really. I mean, even in like he was in a Riley Ace of Spies, and he dies horribly in that.
See, I didn't even catch that. You guys are amazing.
The part is so forgettable. It's like,
but again, a minor part where he dies horribly. He just seems to be living that most of the '80s.
Can I just say, lack of female parts in this? Where are all the women?
So they're
like,
mostly,
where are your women at?
They're mostly dressing. Honestly, they're mostly set dressing.
There is only one other woman who has a speaking part in this movie, and I will play that part for you.
Oh, gosh. Do you mean the farmer's wife?
It is. Wait, let me find it. It was this lady. I've got it marked as Chicken Lady.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Stop your chattering. We'll spend the night here.
That is the only other woman who speaks.
I don't even know if that actress would have gotten paid as a speaking part for that. Maybe that's why. They didn't want to pay people.
She would not
have
gotten her SAG card for that one.
Yeah, I don't think so. So in this fantasy universe that Richard Donner has created, Michelle Pfeiffer is literally the only woman who matters to anybody.
I think there's a woman that's dancing for the priest at one point.
And there are a couple of women who are lounging as well during that point.
Oh, lounging. Mm. Okay.
Yes.
They're like the
But that's it. For the most part, they're only kept as set
dressing. Sexiness. Yeah.
There is another woman's voice that is heard, but it is badly dubbed. It is when Philippe is looking up through the grate in the church, and the little girl is, you know, looking down at him, and the mom comes over and says, "Come away from that."
Hmm.
That is like a very badly dubbed, woman's voice, but you don't see her lips move in the movie, so...
Well, you don't see her face at all, do you?
I don't think you do. I couldn't really tell. It's just a bad dub.
You even see her face.
I mean, you can see the girl's face, and her lips aren't moving when she speaks.
True.
Who was the priest in this? Because I liked him.
John Wood, I think.
I believed he was the priest.
You believed he was the bishop?
Yes. No. Yes, he was a bishop, right?
Yes,
John Wood.
The late John Wood.
It's the bishop.
Oh, no, but he was the good one, right?
Don't Christian
the bad one.
No. I'm not talking about him. I'm sorry.
You're talking about Imperius. Leo McKern. He's one of my favorites. He was Rumpel of Bailey.
Yes, I love him.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Leo McKern myself.
And that's the one I believed. I also kind of believed in the bad guy, too. He was a very wicked bad guy.
The nice McKern thing about Leo McKern is that I've never seen anything in it where he didn't bring his A game.
Right, he's one of those character actors.
Trash, still bringing his A game.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of character actors who will bring their A game to a D movie. Like,
right.
This guy and Christopher Lee always did, even though he was kind of hammy doing so. It was like, that was what he was there to do.
Him and Peter Cushing, you know, they're the
Peter
ones
Peter Cushing. What's his name? David Warner always brings...
Oh, David Warner, good God, yes.
Always brings the A game to the D movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he's ever said no to a part, but he absolutely
doesn't matter because he's phenomenal no matter what he's in.
Exactly.
He just even is the on Doctor Who as the Russian technician on the nuclear sub, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And he's the voice of Ra's al Ghul on Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of just like the amount of professionalism he puts into the most, you know, unrespectable productions.
Can we talk about our favorite scenes?
You can talk about your favorite scene. Because you brought it up.
I liked the scene where, oh my goodness, the hawk, the lady,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember.
Isabeau.
Oh, thank you, Isabeau, and the thief are in the...
Where they're dancing?
Yes.
Of course.
What? What? Because I'm a romantic? Everybody that's listening to this podcast knows that I'm a romantic. Have I hid that from anybody? Do I deny that? Do I say it's untrue? But... No. Yeah, I thought it was, you know, because of course he's also, he sort of that idea of, I know Pete that you're going to know what I'm talking about. In French history, when the noble knight kind of loves a lady, mm-hmm. and there's a word for it, and I can't.
Courtney Love.
Chivalry.
Chivalry. The age of chivalry. Christopher Dudley.
What? We talked about this during Excalibur.
Oh, did we?
Yes. Courtney Love, and Pete said not to be confused with Courtney Love.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because Pete's a funnier guy than I am. Because
he's a funnier guy. But
Pete thinks best on his feet.
He does.
Yes.
I liked that scene, and I liked the scene when the priest, when they were in the old falling down castle.
So Imperius.
Yes. And he was healing her, and then the switching... between when she was unconscious and then when she was conscious and the different relationships and kind of getting more of the story and more character development, and I think those were my two favorite scenes.
Okay.
So what was yours?
My favorite scene?
Yeah.
We'll come back to me. Pete, what's your favorite scene?
Oh, my goodness.
I have two favorite scenes as well. One of my favorite scenes is Philippe actually escaping from Aquila.
Okay.
In his running monologue, or I should say his running dialogue with God.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. Yes, like, I'll do this for you, God.
Which I thoroughly enjoy, especially with the whole thing with I promise not to do it again, God.
Right.
But
I
know
the right
cool person I am.
Yes.
I promise, Lord, never again. But I also know that you know what a weak-willed person I am.
Yes.
And you've also got the Axel F. playing in the background on that scene.
Yes, and see, I love his acting in that part. So I don't know how you guys can say that he didn't deliver.
Again, that was great acting in that scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here's.
But it's not that way in that movie.
My favorite line that he delivers was actually in the beginning. It's this one right here.
Okay.
It's not unlike escaping mother's womb.
Yes. Exactly.
God.
Yes.
What a memory.
Yes.
That was
what a memory? Is that what he said?
Yes.
I love memory. That scene.
That's probably my favorite line that he says.
My other favorite scene is when he's walking away and Redgar Harrow throws that impossibly large sword into the tree by him. And it turns back and he hasn't even stood up. He, from a seated position, he threw a 20-pound sword into a tree.
Yeah, but then he bitches at Philippe for cutting wood with it. I'm like, dude, you just did the same thing.
You just threw your sword.
Oh, it's double standard. Navarre doesn't have to explain himself. He's practically nobility.
Practically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Captain of the Guard.
Yes.
Okay, so we did our favorite scenes.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
No, I didn't.
Who didn't? Oh, well, do yours then, Chris.
Probably when they raid the church that that Imperius has, and he, like the soldier walks over the bad part of the bridge.
Yes.
And he goes on the left.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was funny.
That's probably my favorite part.
Yeah. You know, you surprised me there. I didn't think you were going to say that one. I wasn't surprised by what Pete said. You know, because...
So let's talk about Rutger Hauer in this movie.
Okay.
Watching this movie made me wish I was watching Blade Runner instead.
Chris!
Because he's doing okay in this, but he's not really knocking it out of the park.
He didn't bring his A game to this one.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think Richard Donner wanted him to do was just look smoldering.
Yeah.
And he did. He did that with Aces. But outside of that, he just didn't. And again, I think a big part of that is the script. He doesn't have a lot to work with either.
So this is, what, 3-4 years after Blade Runner?
Well, let me hear his voice from a scene. Play one of the scenes.
I just played one, but let's see.
I don't know. I mean, he really brings, like, the Hauer, look at her! No, look at me.
Yeah, here, I've got that one right here.
Look at her! Look at me!
Now back at your man. Now back to me.
You're very funny, Chris. Now shut up.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so he's kind of like emoting there.
Right. It's funny because a bunch of the movies that he did around this one are really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's just, I don't know.
What's the one where he's like the leader of a band of outlaws?
Robin Hood?
No.
Flesh and Blood?
What is it?
Flesh and Blood.
Okay. Yes, okay.
That's the bastardization of the story of St. Martin.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
No, he's fantastic in that. He's great as John Tanner in The Osterman Weekend, also.
I don't think I saw that one.
That's him and Craig T. Nelson going one-on-one with crossbows.
I did not see that one.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Is it modern day or, you know, contemporary?
Yeah, I think it's based on either a Robert Ludlum novel, maybe?
Hmm.
Frederick Forsyth novel? But it's kind of cool, and then of course he did The Hitcher.
Oh yes! Oh my God!
He was the Minister of Sinister. You can bring a more homicidal human being to the screen.
Oh, he was absolutely perfect in that. Exactly. I think that's probably the first thing I saw him in. And I've seen The Hitcher like a billion times.
I don't blame him.
Oh, I think that's the really scary one.
Yeah.
So that was him.
Where he's like completely awful.
Oh.
Oh, he's.
Rutger Hauer, also the inspiration for Anne Rice's character Lestat.
You're kidding me.
I am not kidding you.
The vampire Lestat is based on Rutger Hauer.
Wow.
She describes him.
Yeah.
And she has said.
Yeah.
You know, that,
she has said that.
She has said that's her inspiration for it.
That's fascinating to me.
When they were first talking about making Lestat into a, or making Interview with the Vampire into a movie, she was hoping that they could get him.
Mm-hmm.
But the studio felt he was too old.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think the character was 21 or so when he was turned to a vampire. So
right.
I think Rutger Hauer at the time was probably in his late 40s.
Mm.
Right, and she'd seen him in something from the late 70s when she first envisioned Lestat. So.
What a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, so 94. Yeah. Actually, it would have been, he would have been...
50.
50. So.
Yeah, he would have... I mean, they could have done something... make up with it, but anyway, back to this.
Well, they can Tarkin him if they want to redo the.
No, please don't. Come on. No.
Yeah.
Messing with my sound now.
So suddenly it became the Polar Express right in front of my very eyes.
Wow, you really do like Santa Claus movies.
I just love Santa Claus.
I can tell. Definitely.
I'm a fan of Santa Claus.
So
in all of his incarnations, so.
What did you think of the ending?
I think they should have cut away before he did the whole lifting her into the air.
That was a little tiresome.
Okay.
Yeah, it had gotten old by that point, so... Yeah.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Oh, here's a Rutger Hauer line.
Do you know that hawks and wolves mate for life?
To each other?
The bishop didn't even leave us that.
I think that line is sweet.
It is. I like it better now.
Like chocolate. Okay, shut up, both of you. I love you dearly, but, you know, I'm just saying. So what very important points have we left out?
I think this is a very important point, that the solution to the problem is literally Deus Ex Machina.
Oh, that's hilarious.
What is that?
That's hilarious.
God has declared an end to it at last. He has given me the knowledge to undo what I have done. After 2 years, he has brought us back together again.
They go to absolutely no effort to find out how to break the curse. They just take the injured hawk to the priest, and God gives him the answer.
No, he's been researching this.
No, he hasn't.
He hasn't. That's the whole point. He says... God has given me the
answer. God has given me the answer.
But it's been years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
2 years.
Well, wait, I don't get what you guys are saying. Hasn't he been praying about it and...
Right.
Disparate prayer is not research.
Well, are you sure?
He didn't know there was going to be an eclipse. All he knew was that God told him there would be a night without a day and a day without a night.
Well, okay, I guess what I meant to say is... He has been praying, because he did something wrong.
Yes, he did.
So he was making up, he was trying to use his spirituality to kind of make up for his past, and then God sort of forgave him and gave him the answer to the riddle.
Not to changing my point at all.
Okay.
Right, exactly. It is exactly Deus Ex Machina.
Okay, well, tell me what that phrase means, and then I'll say if I agree with you.
God from the machine. God comes in and solves the problem with, like, no effort from the characters. Like the T-Rex at the end of Jurassic Park that eats the things that are about to jump and kill them.
Okay.
Like, for no reason. Yeah, for no reason. Hey, here's a T-Rex.
And somehow it gets into the enclosure.
And somehow it snuck up on them.
Right.
It couldn't even move without making...
Boom, earlier in the movie.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that's a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
All right, well then I guess I don't disagree with you about that. I mean, God did solve the problem, but the priest did pray for it, so...
Yes, he prayed for it, and God solved the problem.
Well, after 2 years, how long were they in doing this curse for?
2 years, apparently.
Presumably 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every moment you spend with her. Envy you.
Oh.
As well you should.
Right?
What a beautiful line.
Yes.
Every moment you spend. Oh, I just got chills. For real.
But that's one of the things about Rutger Hauer is that he's got such, he can bring brooding.
Yeah, yeah. He totally can.
Better than anybody else.
Yeah.
He kind of smirks a bit through this one.
So,
and he's got those ice blue eyes and that, you know, that kind of aquiline hawkish look.
Hmm.
And he does this great thing where he'll look away when he delivers the line and then look at the actor.
Mm-hmm. Would you kiss Rutger Hauer?
The point.
Oh my gosh. You're going too deep now.
What were you going to do for?
I'm just, you know.
I said, would you kiss Rutger Hauer?
I would kiss Rutger Hauer. I'm not afraid to say it. Hell yes, I'd kiss Rutger Hauer.
Chris knows who I want to show up at her door one day.
Like 70 years old and I'd kiss Rutger Hauer.
Which actor do I want to show up at our door to our house? That
John
I...
Corbett. Just kidding. William Shatner.
Oh, thank God you know. You know, and I keep asking Chris, like, just to send him an email and tell William Shatner that I'm his biggest fan ever, but Chris won't do it. He won't.
That's because there's, like, a billion women who send him letters like that.
I know, yeah. But I'm special. I am his biggest, shut up, I'm his biggest fan ever. I mean, I stood up in a college acting class and said he was my favorite actor, and he's still my favorite actor, and I don't care what anyone says.
Along those lines, there's this wonderful interview with Christopher Plummer where he talks about how he and William Shatner went to school together in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And how the Shat kept getting all the good roles.
I love it.
And he was always annoyed by that.
I love it.
So.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so, I believed he was Captain Kirk, and I believed...
I think a good director in Star Trek was able to get a good performance out of him once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you talk bad about my William Shatner. Anyway, we're getting off topic. That would be another podcast. We should do a Star Trek podcast.
We should.
Yeah. That could be our next one.
Sure, we'll put out an episode every 3
but
years.
But is it time?
I actually have to say what the moral lesson we're taking away from this movie here.
Okay.
It's this.
Thank you for trying, Philippe. And for standing up for the truth.
I should have known better. Every happy moment in my life has come from lying.
Oh.
And that's the moral we can walk away
Don't with. Say that! That's horrible. Every happy moment in my life has come from lying. That's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is love endures. And truth and justice and, you know.
The bottom line is, I think we're ready to rate.
I think so.
All right, Pete, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Lady Hawk?
I'm going to give it 2.5.
Okay. Want to elaborate on that?
I think that it's... So, on the plus side, it's beautifully shot. I like some of the, like, crackpot background characters, like the Chicken Lady, and some of the people at the cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. I really, really enjoy various parts of Philippe and Imperius and Navarre. I thought John Wood did a great job as the bishop. On the downside, I didn't like the fact that they were wearing essentially steel wool for their armor.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like a lot of the overall lesser production things, like the swords and the sword fights. I didn't care for the soundtrack, and I felt the script should have been stronger. So, splitting the two, I'm going to give it 2 gold, 5 silver.
Excellent.
Go ahead, Chris. You next.
Okay. Well, I actually am going to rate this a little bit higher. I'm going to... You know,
you
it's
shocked
funny
me, sir.
Pete was like, this is a great movie, we've got to watch it. And I'm like, this movie sucks, we can't watch it. I'm gonna land it solidly in the middle at around 2 gold and 8 silver.
Wow.
Reason being, I think the story is good. I think the story had a lot going for it. And I really think this is ripe for a remake, because the quality of this production is kind of on par with a good episode of Hercules the Legendary Journeys.
Okay, good point.
Because, like, there's never an army of more than 4 or 5 people.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like...
And their armor never goes past their nipples. So,
I mean... Right. It's kind of like they raided the community theater wardrobe for costuming.
Oh, boy.
But like you said, I mean, it is beautifully shot. There are so much... So many good landscapes in this. Like, everything that is in the background of this movie is beautiful all the time.
Yeah, the DOP should have gotten some kind of recognition for this.
I think they were up for an award. I don't think they won. It's on the Wikipedia page, and really, I don't care to look right now. but yeah, I mean, Philippe is a great character, and if he were in the hands of a more skilled or more seasoned actor, I think it would have been a better movie. I think Matthew Broderick was just a little bit too green to carry this.
I disagree.
But
I disagree.
That's fine.
I know.
And
I know you two are against
because of that. I would have given it maybe 3.5. But the soundtrack just absolutely takes you out of the movie every time.
Okay, I do agree with that.
But happily, they only use the Axel F score rather sparingly, and I remembered it as being through the whole movie. But there's actually some good parts to this score.
Mm.
So Sharon,
yes.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Lady Hawk?
Well, okay, I just want to say that being a positive person, I always think you guys underrate things. So, again, I'm going to give this one a solid 3 because I enjoyed it. Right now, it's 2017, and for the year that it came out in, it's still an average movie for me. And I still think for the love story, and I thought everyone did decent jobs, and there were shining moments in it, and that's why I would solidly give it a 3. And because I even cried when they both changed back at the end, and if a movie can make me cry, then I will give it 3 gold pieces.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh wow, I thought you were both argue with me. On this.
I can't really argue with you.
No, because it's opinion, so why would we argue with that?
I can't really argue with where you put it in time. The exception, of course, that,
in the case of Excalibur, Chris is dead wrong.
Well, and I think Excalibur is one that I gave a 4, and where I gave, Stardust a 5.
You know, I think when the end times happen, I think it all is revealed. Yes. I think you guys are going to find out that God agrees with me.
Okay, well...
He's going to sort people out by, like, okay, everybody who thought Excalibur was great, you get in this column over here, you're going to purgatory for 6 years until you realize that the end of the movie is just garbage.
Well, I think you're already wrong, because you're calling God a he, and very clearly, God is a she.
Okay.
You say and, this is where you're both wrong, because God is neither.
I think I get to pick the next movie.
I just wanted to say that I wanted to agree with you, what you say, where you place it in its context in time, because this is the same year that Legend came out.
Mm.
This is the same year that Red Sonja came out.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, they weren't making great fantasies in 1985.
But they had to start somewhere. And I there were just sparkling moments in this that made me shiver.
Yeah, but there were sparkling moments in Legend also.
Yeah. and Legend also has some really beautiful visual images.
Oh my God, yes.
Yes, but again, boring for a blind person.
Right, absolutely.
So, I am who I am, so I can only...
And you stay as who you am.
I can only...
That's all I am.
I can only give it what I can perceive, so...
And for all of our listeners born after 1980, that was Popeye.
Yes. I used to watch that. Do I get to pick the next one? Because I
you
have
do
one
get
in mind.
To pick the next one.
Okay.
What's your next movie, Sharon?
I am going to choose...
All right, you're choosing.
Willy Wonka.
There's no such movie as Willy
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, that's a different movie.
No, there is a Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
That's the one.
The older one.
That's Willy Wonka.
Wonka
and the
okay,
Factory.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
If that's the case, I think we should watch the newer one as well and do a comparison contrast like we did with Oz...
Should we do
Wizard of Oz and Oz the Great and Powerful?
Should we do them both as one episode, or should we do Willy Wonka for next episode and then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for the following episode?
So we'll do a comparison contrast in one episode.
I think we could.
I think so too.
What do you think, Chris?
I think we will start talking about Willy Wonka next episode.
Okay.
And we'll see how long it takes us to get to the remake, and then maybe we'll talk about them both in the same one.
Okay.
Whichever it is, I reserve the right to pick the movie after Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, it's your turn.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't want Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to be my pick just because it comes after Sharon's.
No. I'm just saying that if we, you know, we should.
I've already got a pick.
To compare and contrast them since we did that with Oz.
I've already got it picked.
What's okay.
That? I've already picked my next movie.
Oh, what is it?
Really? Yeah. You want to share with us?
I do.
Okay, what?
The Last Witch Hunter.
Oh, boy. Was that that really horrible one?
We haven't seen
the Vin Diesel one based on his D&D character.
Wait. So, no, I'm thinking about Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, that's great. We'll put that on the list.
No! Oh, God! Yes. Oh, sure. It was so bad. Yeah. All right, so,
Let's put that on the list.
That's on the list.
All right, everybody.
Well, okay. since you chose The Last Witch Hunter, I already have my next pick as well.
What's it going to be?
Beastmaster.
Oh, I
can't wait for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is my next pick.
All right, so join us next episode for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and possibly Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as well. Until then, do things that are awesome and fantastical, and no one will believe you.
And go see movies.
See movies.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. And join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.